Okay, good morning everyone, and once again thank you all for coming. Today's shiur, you know, we try to stick to the topics mentioned in the parsha, so sometimes it can be a little frustrating because there's some basic things that don't come up necessarily in the parshas, especially halachos which are the Rabbanan, which have their basis in rulings of the Rabbanan. But this week's parasha, Parashas Kisisa, and also next week, Parashas Vayakha, lend themselves to discussions of Hilchos Shabbos, because in both parashas we find we find mention of laws of Shabbos. So I would like to speak about a very, very relevant topic in the Hilchos Shabbos, which has a basis in yesterday's parasha. We have, there's a pasuk in the parasha, we have it here on the sheet, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemar, Vatod Dabro B'nei Yisrael Lemar, Achaz Shabsosai Tishmoru, that you should guard my Shabbosim, you should guard Shabbos, Ki Osi Beini U'Beineichem U'Doroseichem. Because Shabbos is an oath, Shabbos is a sign that exists between myself and the Jewish people for all the generations. In order that you should know that I am Hashem who sanctifies you. So the pasuk uses the expression as Shabsosai Tishmoru, that you should guard Shabbos. In the Mechilta, which is one of the midrashim of Halacha, we know that there are two types of midrashim that we have. We have midrashim of Agadata, which are the famous midrashim, Medrash Rabbah, and then we have midrashim which bring drushes of Halacha. So one of them, the one which pertains to the Sefer Shmos, is referred to as the Mechilta. And in this book it says that from the words of Shavsofei Tishmoru, L'rabos Dvarim Shehen Mishum Shvus, that the word Tishmoru means you should guard. Guarding something means that you have to create a security system. You have to create fences. So these types, when we find such a word in Pesukim, which we find in different places in the Torah, what the Torah often means to say is that you have to make extra protection. Tishmaru means you have to make, you have to guard it very securely. So the Chazal here say that this teaches us that this includes Dvarim Shehem Mishum Shvus, things which are Mishum Shvus. What is Shvus? So the idea of a shvus is, a rabbinic enactment, it's a halacha which has its basis in the Rabbanan, which was made pertaining to the Hilchos Shabbos, that the Rabbanan forbade certain activities because of the similarity. If you do this, it's very similar to something that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and therefore the concern was that if you do this, you may come to be Mechal Shabbos. Or in another, a similar type of idea would be that if you do this, you may come to disregard Shabbos. So therefore, we have quite a few things in the halacha which are asur and mishum shvus. And one of them, one of the most basic, and the one that probably pertains to us the most, if week in and week out, is that the Gemara tells us in several places, in the Seches Gittin and other places, the Gemara says that Amiro la'akum shvus, that for a Jew to tell a guy on Shabbos to do a malacha which the Jew cannot do, this is something that was prohibited in Shum Shvus. When the Rabbanan took the license based on this pasuk, as Shavsosai Tishmoru, to go ahead and guard the Torah, to guard Shabbos, so one of the things that they felt was important was that they prohibited a Jew to tell a guy to go ahead and do work for him on Shabbos. Okay, and thus we come to the topic of today's shiur, the Shabbos guy, which is really another way of saying the basic overview of the laws of Amir al-Akum, what a person is allowed to tell a guy to do on Shabbos and what a person is not. So, as a base, now I just want to say ahead of time that there are many, many halachas, and really this could be the basis of many shiurim for several weeks. But I would just like for today to, you know, just to give an overview, a basic idea, the basic guidelines, and from that, one would get a clarity, and if you had a particular question, so then, the person would be more sensitized to knowing what could be a shiloh and what is not. So this is the idea. We have the statement in the Gemara that the rabbis forbade a Jew to tell a guy to do malacha on Shabbos. As a general rule, that is true. Now, we all know that the idea of a Shabbos guy, that, you know, the person has a guy who a trusty non-Jew who, you know, will sometimes comes in to help out in different situations of need. Today especially, you know, you have many situations, electronic things which are, you know, go off at different times and various issues which come up. But throughout the generations, this has been an issue. And so let's see exactly how this is treated in halacha. Now, the basic idea, contrary to what people think, is that you can't just tell a guy to do anything, right? That for sure one cannot do. This is what the Gemara tells us, that amiru lahakam is forbidden. A person cannot just simply have a guy and say, okay, now do this, now do that. Why is that? So the reason for this, there are actually three reasons that are brought in the Rishonim. And the reasons that we'll see, that each reason that you know, depending on which reason you say, would come out a different halacha. So the most basic reason, the one which is, I think, the most well-known, is found in the Rambam, in Hilchos Shabbos. We have it here on the sheet, number 2. The Rambam says, Asur lomar l'goy lasos lanu malacha b'Shabbos, that it is forbidden to tell a non-Jew to do malacha for us, of one of the forbidden malachas on Shabbos. Even though you'll say, well, why shouldn't I be able to tell a guy? The guy doesn't have to keep Shabbos. The guy's not even allowed to keep Shabbos. So let me tell him to do it, and then everybody is happy. So the Rambam says it's forbidden. He'll tell us why in a moment. He says, not only that, says the Rambam, but that not only is it forbidden to tell a guy to do work for you on Shabbos, but even if you told him before Shabbos to do it on Shabbos, it would be prohibited. In other words, to tell him during the week, come on Shabbos and turn off my lights, you know, or come on Shabbos and turn on my oven, right? So that would also be forbidden. And not only that, but ba'afo pi she'enu tzarech lo'osu malacha el l'achar Shabbos. It also would be forbidden on Shabbos to tell a guy to do something that you don't need him to do until after Shabbos. Whereas, for example, if you see a guy on Shabbos and you say, oh, I was walking back from shul and I bumped into the gardener. And I say, you know, my grass really, it's been a while since I had the lawn mowed. Maybe you could come during the week and mow my lawn. So you're telling him on Shabbos to do something during the week. That is also prohibited. So the prohibition of Amiru L'Hakam includes three scenarios. It includes the most famous, most basic, which is telling him on Shabbos to do something for Shabbos. That's most often when it comes up. And then you have to tell him during the week to come and do something on Shabbos. And then you have to tell him on Shabbos to come and do something during the week. All three of those scenarios, generally speaking, are prohibited. Why should this be? So the Rambam says, "V'davar zeh asur midivrei sofrim," that this was prohibited by the rabbis. Kidei shelo tihyeh Shabbos kala beineihem, in order that Shabbos, a person should not become callous to Shabbos, v'yavo la'asos ba'atzman, and a person will end up doing the things himself. In other words, says the Rambam, that if a person was allowed to just simply tell a guy indiscriminately to do whatever he needed on Shabbos, so then it would come out that the reverence of Shabbos would be diminished, because the things that I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos, I end up doing. I don't do it myself, but I tell a person to do it. So it ends up happening. And in such a context, it's possible that over the passage of time, a person will become callous to the whole thing and will end up doing it himself. Say, what's the difference? You're allowed to, you forget, you know, that the human nature is, you forget sometimes, why am I allowed to do this? I just know I'm allowed to do it, but I forget why. So a person could forget that, well, it's because the guy did it. I'm so used to having the lights put on or turned off, or my oven turned on, or my air conditioning, or whatever it may be, that I may end up doing it myself. And therefore, says the Rambam, for this reason, the rabbis prohibited Amiru L'Hakam. This is the reason given in the Rambam. Now, if we turn over the sheet to page 2, this is not the only opinion. That is one opinion. Okay? Now, a second opinion is found a very remarkable shita that we find here of Rashi. We have a Mishnah in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos. The Mishnah tells us, we have it here on the page, Misha Hichshich Baderech, that a person who was going on Friday and he was walking and he had his money with him, and lo and behold, he got delayed and now it's coming already to Shabbos and he's stuck. What am I going to do with my wallet? I can't carry it on Shabbos, and anyway it's Muktzah. What am I going to do with my wallet? So the Mishnah tells us, no saying kiso lenachri, that he is allowed to take his wallet and hand it to a guy and tell the guy, you take it from me. Okay, I can't, it's going to be Shabbos, I can't take it anymore. But assuming he finds someone who he feels he can trust, he can say, please take my wallet and whatever, take it to my home and drop it off there. This is the ruling in the Mishnah. So the Gemara questions this. If you skip the rest of the Mishnah to the Gemara says 2 lines later, my time is Sharulei Rabbanon Lemesav Kisei Lenachri. Right? So the Gemara asks, why is he allowed to do this? Why is he allowed to, he's not allowed to carry the wallet himself on Shabbos, so why is he allowed to tell a guy to take it for him? This is the question the Gemara asks, to which the Gemara answers that this is an exception to the general rule, because the Chazal knew that a person, when it comes to a person's attachment to his money, it's the type of thing that, you know, it would be very, very difficult for a person to just say, all right, I'll just drop my wallet and go. But people have a very hard time doing that. And therefore, the Rabbanan felt that if you don't allow this, so the Gemara says, Kimuhu Rabbanan, the Rabbanan understood the human nature, the Ein Adam Mamid Asmo Al Mamono, that a person will not just stand by and watch his money be, you know, taken away. It's very hard for a person to do that. He works for the money, and now he's just going to drop it, and somebody else is going to come pick it up. Very difficult to watch that. And therefore, says the Gemara, he will share a slave if you don't permit him to give it to a guy. He will end up carrying it himself. In other words, in this particular situation, the Rabbanan allowed it because they felt that here, to guard Shabbos, Shabbos will be better guarded if you allow the person to give it to a guy. Because in this situation, if you don't, the alternative is you're going to tell him just drop it. He's not going to do that. And he'll end up carrying it on Shabbos, and he'll be Mechal Shabbos, was talking in a place where there was no Erev. So therefore, he'll be Mechal Shabbos, and this is the Raisa, he will violate the Shabbos on the Torah law of carrying. So therefore, they allowed it. This is the Gemara. But the Gemara originally questioned, why did the Rabbanan allow this? So it's a remarkable thing. If you look at the first Rashi on the Gemara, which happens to be on the first wide line, Rashi, in explaining what the Gemara's question was, my time is Sharolei Rabbanan, why did the rabbis allow him to carry it, to give it to a guy? Says Rashi, Barei hu shlucho, we sign up the Shabbos. How could you give it to a guy? A guy is your shliach. He is your agent. And if he's your agent, so then he's acting on your behalf. Presumably what Rashi means is, it's as if you did it yourself. In other words, we have a concept in the Torah of shlichus, of agency, that a person has the ability to have an agent, that somebody could act on my behalf. There are certain things that in the halacha you must do yourself, right? For example, you can't make a shliach to put on tefillin for you. The general rule is a mitzvah shebegufo, something that a person has to do with his own body, so he can't have a someone do it for him. Right? That's a tefillin would be a good example of that. However, other things a person could do through a shliach. You don't necessarily have to do it yourself. There are certain mitzvahs that a person could do through a shliach. And why is that? So the basis is because we learn out from the Torah that when a person shliach does something, when my agent acts on my behalf, it's as if I did it myself. So it seems from Rashi that the problem that the Gemara was dealing with was that if you give it to a guy to carry it for you, so he's your shliach. And therefore, through the concept of shlichus, it would be as if you did it yourself. This is apparently what you see from Rashi, which would give a new light to the prohibition of telling the guy. Now, it would come out according to Rashi that if you told the guy to turn the lights on for you on Shabbos, the reason why it would be prohibited, you don't have to say the Rambam's reason. The Rambam says because if you tell him to turn the lights on Shabbos, so if you do it enough times, you'll end up getting, you know, becoming callous to Shabbos. You'll end up doing it yourself. But Rashi says what seems to be a more basic idea, which is that he's your agent, and therefore what he does is what you do. Now, it has to be understood, this Rashi presents certain difficulties, because there are two obvious questions that come to mind. One would be that you'll say, well, if that's true, then it should be prohibited by the Torah law. It shouldn't be Nidarabbanan. It should come out that Nidaraisa, if you ask a guy to do something to you, that it should be prohibited, and yet, because he's your agent, it's as if you're doing it yourself, and yet we know that that's not so. The Gemara always says that Amir La'akam is an Issa Dirabbanan, that telling a guy, a non-Jew, to do something, excuse me, is an Issa Dirabbanan. That would be one question. A second question which would come up would be, well, one could argue that we have a klal which is mentioned in the Gemara in several places, that the laws of shlichus don't apply to goyim, that it's derived from a pasuk in the Chumash that a shliach has to be a Jew, that there ain't shlichus v'akam. So therefore, these are two questions which come up on Rashi's opinion, and this is discussed at length in different mefarshim of this Rashi, but what it seems that comes out is that we would say l'chumrah, in other words, even though as a general rule a person could not make a guy a shliach to act on his behalf, right? For whatever situation a person would want to make a shliach, he could not use a guy. But here, when it comes to the violation of Shabbos, so l'chumrah, we would say on a rabbinic basis that there would be shlichus. In other words, this would not be the standard shlichus, but here, when it comes to Shabbos, and we're dealing with the severity of Shabbos, so we might say that the law of shlichus should apply. But whatever the case may be, this is a second reason that's given for why you cannot tell a guy to do something on Shabbos, because of the fact that he is acting as your agent. A third reason, which is presented in a different Rashi, in a different Masechta, we find in the Gemara Masechta of Avodah Zarah on Daf Tezvav, there is a discussion in the Gemara which is not we don't need it for our purposes, but we have here the Rashi, it's source number 4 on the sheet. So if you look toward the end of the Rashi, so Rashi says the last 4 lines, he says Umasha Osar Lomar Yisroel Lomar Lo'obi Tochavim Asei Likach. That the fact that it is prohibited for a Jew to tell a guy on Shabbos, do this for me, dibur asa. This is based on a pasuk that we find in the Navi, a pasuk, if you turn over to the next page, we have number 5, there is a pasuk, pasuk which is central to the laws of Shabbos. This is a rather well-known pasuk. Some people actually include this pasuk when they make Kiddush on Shabbos morning, right? You may also recognize this pasuk. It's found in Haftarah that's laid on Yom Kippur. So the pasuk says like this. The Navi Yeshaya says, "In Toshiv Yishabos Raglecha Asos Chafatzecha B'yom Kodshi." Right? That you should refrain on Shabbos from doing your own interests. The Karotzo La Shabbos Oned. You should proclaim Shabbos as a day of enjoyment. Right? From this pasuk, there are many laws of Shabbos that are learned out from this pasuk. The idea of Oneg Shabbos is learned from this pasuk. The Karotzo La Shabbos Oneg with Dosh Hashem Mechubad, that for you give honor to the day that was sanctified by Hashem. Here's the part that we're interested in. The end of the pasuk says, "V'chibadato, you should honor Shabbos, me'asos rochecha, from not doing your usual activities, mimso cheftecha v'daber davar, from pursuing your regular interests and from speaking about things that are forbidden." In other words, the pasuk is telling us many, many halachas are learned out from this pasuk. Even we have in the smiris on Shabbos that we say, one of the Friday night smiris, we speak about the things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So, you know, chafotzecha, asurim, v'gam lachshov, cheshbonos, all of these things are derived that we say, we proclaim that we're not allowed on Shabbos to pursue our own interests. Why not? Right? Because of this pasuk. I mean, so chefs, you have to put all of your personal interests aside. V'daber davar, and you are not allowed to speak about that which is forbidden. So from these words, the Gemara derives that a person is not allowed on Shabbos to speak about things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. In other words, you can't say on Shabbos, tomorrow I'm driving to Orlando. You're not allowed to say that. You can't say those words. Why not? You say, well, what's it? I'm not doing it. I'm doing it tomorrow. I'm not telling a non-Jew to do it. The reason is because you're not allowed to drive on Shabbos. So if you're not allowed to drive on Shabbos, you can't speak about driving on Shabbos. That's the daber dover. It's the halacha, which is, not the easiest to keep. This is, you know, it's also not so well known, but we have many, many halachas that pertain to speak on Shabbos. I forgot to call this person before Shabbos. The minute Shabbos is over, and I pick up the phone and call him. That's very nice. You're not allowed to say that on Shabbos. The person can't say that. They say, why not? Why not? What am I doing? What's wrong with that? It's better than saying Lashon Hara, right? So that is true. It is better. It is. It must be calling to say Lashon Hara, correct? Right. But the fact is that nonetheless, even though it's better than speaking Lashon Hara, that's true. But you're not allowed on Shabbos to speak about what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. This is halacha. So that being the case, Rashi says that to tell a guy to come turn on the lights is a violation of this. In other words, the davar davar, you're speaking about something that you're not allowed to speak. You're not allowed to turn on the lights on Shabbos. So to tell a non-Jew, come turn on the lights for me, would be an encroachment of these words. The davar davar, it's not the right thing to do. It's not. You can't say that. That's a violation of the davar davar. This is the third opinion. This would be the three opinions. So again, to summarize, we have three opinions. The first one is that a person, the concern is that if a person does this, tells Goyim to act for him on Shabbos, Shabbos will become callous to him, and he may end up doing these things himself. That's number one, that's the Rambam. The second one is that the guy is acting with your shliach. And the third one is the daber davar, that you're speaking about the prohibited. All of these are midrabanan, even this pasuk, even though it's found in the Navi, so halachas that are found in the Navi do not, even though they're in the Tanakh, but they don't have the status of a Doraisa, they actually have a higher status than the Rabbanan. It's called Midibre Sofrim, that it's from the words of the Nevi'im, so a little bit of a higher status it has, but nevertheless, none of these, it's not considered prohibited by the law of the Torah, yeah.
Reason number three, is there an exception if you're learning about what not to do?
Oh, so if you're learning, yes. If you're learning about what you can't do on Shabbos, then it's okay. That's right. Because you're not in order to say, you tell someone, it's like, look, you're not allowed to drive a car on Shabbos, that you can say. But to actually detail something that you plan on doing, that you're not. That's correct. For a mitzvah, one second, hold on. So now, for a mitzvah, it's different. For a mitzvah, because the pasuk says, Mimso Cheftzicha, the words leading up to this, it says, Mimso Cheftzicha, from pursuing your pursuits. So we have the diuk that the Chazal made, Chafotzeh, we have it in the Smiris, right? Chafotzecha Asurim, that it's only your pursuits that are prohibited. But if it's Cheftzeh Shamayim, but if it's God's pursuits, then it's mutter. So therefore, for a person to say, I'm driving tomorrow to this place to give tzedakah, right, that would be, that's something else. Or to sit down, technically people in the shul want to get together and discuss the needs of the shul, right? If it's, on Shabbos, the only time they could get together and say, well, you see, the roof is leaking, we got to do something about this, we have to call someone to fix it, and so forth, that you'd be allowed to do on Shabbos, because that's called Chefse Shamayim. That's not Chafotzecha. Nimtzo Chefsecha, the pasuk says, Chefsecha, your pursuits. If it's God's pursuits, then it's different. So this is the basic rule. Now, so there you have it. The three reasons why you have to, why you cannot tell a guy to do malach on Shabbos. Now, if you think about it, it would make a difference which reason you hold by. Because, for example, let's say you want to tell a guy during the week to come do something on Shabbos. But I'm going to tell him today, Sunday, I'm going to say, sir, please come the next week and Shabbos and turn on the lights for us. So that would not be a violation of this pasuk, because if the problem is that that bears a bar that you go speak on Shabbos, only things you're permitted, well, I didn't say it on Shabbos, I said it during the week, right? So that wouldn't be a problem. You know, on the other hand, let's say if you take the reason of shlichus, that where the second reason, that is when a guy does it, as if you're doing it, so then if, let's say you told a guy on Shabbos, please come after Shabbos and drive me to the airport. Right, so if the problem was shlichus, that wouldn't be that should be permitted, because you're telling him on Shabbos to do something after Shabbos. So when he actually does it, is when he's acting as your agent, and at that point Shabbos is over. So that wouldn't be a problem either, right? So theoretically, you could play off these reasons against each other and say, well, if you hold this reason, this is mutter. If you hold this reason, this is mutter. But I guess, unfortunately, for our purposes, the rabbis accepted all three reasons. All three of them were included, and therefore we are stuck with all the chumras. In other words, you can't tell them on Shabbos or after Shabbos because of the other reasons, right? It wouldn't be a problem of shlichus. You can't tell them on Sunday to come on Shabbos, even though it's not daver davar. But nevertheless, this is what we have. This is what we have. But for this, that's the basis of the Rambam's ruling, which is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that a person cannot tell a guy to come after him on Shabbos. Now, this is the it. Now, where do we have room for a heder? If that's the case, so you'll say, so then, so why is there ever such a thing as a Shabbos guy? It should not be allowed ever. Right? It should never be allowed. So, it should be noted that, before we get to more basic situations, there are general situations where this law does not apply at all. Now, for example, one of the basic cases would be with Sorech Chola, that for the needs of a sick person on Shabbos, you are allowed to tell a guy to do malacha, even a malacha d'araisa, you'd be allowed to tell a non-Jew to go on behalf of a sick person, even if the sick person is not a sakana. Even if it's obviously, if it's a chol sheyesh bo sakana, you could do anything, to a person's life is in danger, a Jew could do it himself, you don't need a guy, and oftentimes it's better not to use a guy, it's better to just do it yourself if you're able to. But the fact is that even for a chol sheyesh bo sakana, even for a person who, his life is not in danger, but he is considered a person who is a chola. He's bedridden, a bedridden person, a person who's laid up in bed, he can't be, whether he's in the hospital or at home, it doesn't matter. If the person is ill, the type of illness that keeps a person, that keeps a person in bed, like a person has the flu, for example, but that already would be considered a chol hashem bo sakana. So there, if need be, a person can tell a guy to do anything. And so too, included in the category of chol hashem bo sakana is tzarchei ketanim, the needs of young children. If it's something that the child really needs, then it would be permitted to outright to tell a guy to do it on Shabbos. The rabbis waived the prohibition in this case. And therefore, for example, if a person needed someone to go to the pharmacy to pick up his medicine on Shabbos, so if it was the type of medicine, if it was just for an ache, so what's called a mechush, if it was just the question of a person has a headache or something like that, then that's not included, generally speaking, in the category of a chola. But if a person had some sort of needed an antibiotic or something like that, it's already a serious thing. So then you could tell a guy directly, go please get me a car and I'll pay you after Shabbos, go pick up the medicine for me, and that would be fine. Similarly, you could tell a guy to turn on a device, that a child may need. any sort of humidifier or anything that along those lines, and not just for a child. A child is always presumed to be a chola shein bo sakana. I mean, it has to be a need. And if the child wants a yo-yo because he's acting out of line, you could not say, "Well, I need that." You know, maybe for the parents' insanity, that might be considered a chola, but for the child himself, that would not count. But if it was something that that was needed, basic need, so there we say that it's mutter. So there we say that's one exception. Okay, another exception would be even if it was a malacha d'oraisa, you could tell him to go in the car on Shabbos and drive there, and whatever, you could turn on the electricity. You could a lot of different things. You could cook something, right? You didn't put up any sort of hot water before Shabbos, and now the person really ill needs some hot water. Person that is sick in bed and needs hot water, you could ask the guy to come in and cook a few. That would be fine. Okay, another example where this would be permitted would be lohaser es hamichshol, if it was a question of an obstacle for the public. For example, if the Erev fell down on Shabbos, so then you could, if it was doable, if it was fixable, you could ask a non-Jew to go fix it on Shabbos. Right, you could outright go, "Please go fix the Erev," because of the fact that this is going to be a mitzvah, the rabbi, this is many people are going to be carrying and unwittingly desecrating Shabbos. So therefore, that would be something else you could do. Those are two basic examples. Okay, now, however, beyond this, there are others. There are other cases, but there are not a ton of other cases. So therefore, a lot of the things that we need, you'll say, "Well, what do you mean?" But I've had situations in my house where, this happened or that happened. I called in a guy. It didn't fit any of these categories. So for this, we have to come on to other heter. In other words, the basic law of Amir al-Akam, this would be prohibited. It would not be allowed. Okay, so, yeah, sorry.
Just a quick clarification. Yeah, the issue of Eruv, the Eruv is kosher before Shabbos,
yeah,
and it falls on Shabbos,
yes,
that doesn't create a problem, correct?
Well, it does really create a problem. There is a question whether you should tell people. There are those who say, it's a big argument in the Poskim, where some say that it's better not to say anything because of the fact that it would be, people who are doing it like a misasek. They don't realize that they're doing it. In other words, they're doing what they think is permitted to, in the laws of Malacha. There are those who say that that's not such a bad thing, and it would be better just to leave it rather than to announce it, and then you'll end up people who do it amaze it. You'll have people who know it's wrong. But if an error falls on Shabbos, it needs to be fixed. In other words, the Rav, if he has a guy and the string fell down or whatever it may be, and it could be easily fixed, the correct thing is to fix it. That would be the simplest thing. You get a guy, tell him what he has to do, and fix it. So it may not always be, I don't know how common that it could be. It's too complicated to fix. But it, if it's a simple rectification, then you should do it. Okay, so these would be the basic heter. Now the question is, the common cases where it comes up in a person's house is, "I forgot to shut the light in my bedroom before Shabbos." Right? Now what is that? That doesn't, so where does that shine in? Or to the contrary, the light didn't go on, we needed the light to go on. So that doesn't fit the categories that we said until now. So basically, the basic heter that we have in the halacha, which is something that really needs to be understood, is the Rishonim. We find this in the Rishonim. It seems clear in the Gemara that this is true, but it's never stated outright. And that is that to say to a guy something, b'derech remez, to hint to a guy that I need something done, so that is not considered a mirror. That's not, in other words, when the rabbis ban instructing the guy to do something on Shabbos, that's only if you say it to him explicitly. However, if you hinted to him, so that's not called I told him. If I hinted to him, then that's called that I said it, and in a certain sense, it was his own decision. In other words, he's not doing it because I told him to do it. I informed him of a situation, and on his own, he realized that, oh, this guy, my friend the Jew, has this need. I better go help him out. That would be permitted. That's what's called derech remez, or in the Aramaic, it's called remiza. Remiza would mean to hint it to him. Now, the question is, what is a remez? This is really the issue. What is a remez? In other words, now let's say you had a great pantomime person who came and without opening his mouth acted out a situation, and he points to the lights and he goes, you know, goes over to the switch and he acts with his finger. He said, well, that's a remez. You know, I didn't tell him to do it. He figured it out on it. What a genius this guy is. I always knew that my neighbor was a brilliant person. He figured it out on his own. Right? So that's not called a remez. Right? That's not called a remez. Even though you didn't use words, that's not a remez. A remez is where you said something from which he made the decision on his own. For example, if a person says, I can't sleep in my room because I can't sleep with the lights on. So, the light's on, and I can't sleep. So you didn't tell him to shut it off. But on his own, he realized that, okay, for some reason, an Orthodox Jew or religious Jew doesn't do that on Shabbos. Doesn't do that. And the poor guy can't sleep. And I can help him. I don't have these laws of Shabbos. So I can go shut off the light myself. That would be okay. However, that is only, now here's where people make a very big mistake. This is one of the most misunderstood halachas that we have. That's only because you did not suggest the course of action to him. But if a person would say, I can't sleep because the lights are on, I just wish somebody would come and shut the light. So you'll say, well, I didn't tell you to do it. I didn't tell him to do it. I said, I wish somebody would come. So on his own, he volunteered to be that somebody. That is not called derech remez. Right, that is what's called an halacha remez b'lush and sivui, even though in fact you didn't directly say it to him. You'll say, well, I hinted at him, that's true. You didn't solicit his services directly. However, the fact is that you suggested the course of action, you suggested the remedy to the situation. That would not be good, right? For example, another example is, you know, can you please help me? Right, and here's where this is the tough one. Can you please help me? Right, now the saying "Can you please help me?" is, you'll say, well, so what's that? Okay, now I didn't say I wish somebody would come shut off the light. I just said, "Can you please help me?" But that means you're soliciting his actions. You're soliciting. You're saying to him, "I want you to come help me. I want you to come do that." So unfortunately, it seems in the poskim that is not. That would not be considered a remez. However, on the other hand, if you said that, in a dark room where you needed, you have the people coming to the Shabbos meal and the lights didn't go on or whatever, if you got to set it before Shabbos, somebody accidentally hit the switch and you want someone to turn it back on. So to say there's not enough light in the room, that's okay. Because I didn't tell him what to do. I said, because in other words, the idea is, if he's sensitized to your situation, which on his own causes him to come act for you, that's okay. Because that's what he did it himself. And that was his own decision. He didn't have to do it. You know, as we all know, if you've ever attempted to get a guy, sometimes you try it, and the guy doesn't get it. You know, he's I can't sleep in my room, there's so much light. The guy, gosh, I feel so bad. Right? So in a situation like that, you're stuck. Right? And that happens. Right? Yeah, I'm sorry.
He's brilliant enough to understand it, but then he says, oh, would you like me to turn the light
on? Okay, so if he says, would you like me to turn the light on, this is also a tough one. And now all you need to say is a simple three-letter word of yes, right? So that also, it seems, that really, I know this is a tough one, but I don't think that's mutter either, because again, you are telling, even though he volunteered on his own, but you're telling him, yes, I want you to come turn the light on for me. So what you really, it's a tough thing. What you need to say is, this is a good reason that a person should prepare well before Shabbos. Because what you really need to say is, look, I, I, you know the situation, you know, or whatever. I don't know. Maybe somebody should print a book of good lines, you know, to say to a guy. That would be a little paperback, you know. Good ways to, you know, what's that?
Say once again.
Oh, all right. Oh, that's a good idea. Okay, you can say to him that I can't, you know, the law doesn't allow me to. The law doesn't allow me to answer yes to that question. Much as I'd like to. So that you have to know. Okay, one second. So this is the heter of a remnant. So therefore, I'm just trying to bring out that on the one hand there is such a heter, and this is a very useful heter. I mean, if you do it right, this is a very good thing. This is a very good thing. In other words, as long as the person is sensitized to your situation, then that's fine. But to solicit in any way, that you cannot do. Yes, I'm sorry.
Can you set up with a goy, if I ever come over to your house on this day,
yeah,
and I'm making a hint,
right,
that means that I need you to come and
okay, I don't know. That can you have a standing relationship with him? See, again, probably if you did it exactly that way, then you're telling him, whenever I say this, it means come turn the lights on. So I don't know if you could just, what you could do, actually I don't know if you could do that, but what you could do is, you could just try to explain to him, you know, listen, this is the situation, you know, we have these laws, we can't do it, but sometimes there's a need, and you know, whatever, you know, let him figure it out on his own. That's really the correct way to do it. Yeah, right. His wife is
something.
He's only considered. Yeah, I'm going to get that. Right. One second. You can't say.
You can't guarantee that he's not going to say what a jury.
Okay, so what you should do after Shabbos, you are allowed to compensate him after Shabbos. You're allowed to go after Shabbos and bring him over. So that you can do. So in other words, in a situation like that, it probably would be wise to do that after Shabbos. You know, I remember years ago I was in a bungalow colony up in New York, and we had an issue on Shabbos, and the guy was the caretaker on the grounds, a shikr, you know, he was a fellow that he was already half in the next world on Friday night by the time I got to him, and he came, and whatever, he probably had a few nice things to say, but the owner of the place said, bring him some beer after Shabbos, he'll be your best friend. And sure enough, that's what I did, and any other time I had a need, he was running to help me. So you know, it requires a little savvy. Now, I just wanted to, in the interest of running a little late here, there is one catch to all of this, which this is a very unknown or misunderstood halacha, which goes together with the prohibition of telling the guy to do something, and that is that aside from the iser of telling the guy to do something, the Rabbanan made a companion iser that you are not allowed to benefit from the work that a guy does for a Jew on Shabbos. You are not allowed to derive hanah. This is an iser the Rabbanan made. If a guy comes on Shabbos and cooks food for you, you're not allowed to eat it on Shabbos. And not only can't you eat it on Shabbos, but you can't eat it after Shabbos until the amount of time elapses that it would have taken you to cook that food. In other words, so that because they were very concerned that, again, the same business that you'll have going doing things to you left and right on Shabbos, which could lead to the problems that we mentioned. So therefore, the Rabbanan said, if a guy does something to you on Shabbos, you can't benefit from it. Even if he did it, you can't benefit from it, and it's absolutely no benefit, meaning even after Shabbos. To use it right away after Shabbos would also be a benefit, because it would have taken me 20 minutes to cook, and now I save 20 minutes because he cooked it for me on Shabbos. Even that you can't do. You have to wait. That's called Kadesh Yasa, the amount of time it takes to make it, you would have to wait those 20 minutes. So now we really have to think about it, because if a guy now is going to come and turn on your lights, so even if you did it to Derek Remez, even if you did it in a way of a hint, But that only helps as far as the prohibition of telling him, instructing him. But there's another issue. The other issue is you're not allowed to benefit from what he did. So even if he did it, he'll say, well, he did it on his own. You know, I just informed him of what was going on. But even in a situation where I didn't say to do anything, if a guy knows that I can't cook on Shabbos and he comes and makes me scrambled eggs Shabbos morning, he says, hey, you probably want a hot breakfast. I'm not allowed to eat it. I'm not allowed to eat it on Shabbos because of the fact that this is a kiss of the Rabbanim. You're not allowed to be nenemi melechas akla. You can't benefit from the work done of a non-Jew on Shabbos. So that being true, so then what's the whole discussion? So then what does it help? You'll say that there are situations that you could tell them in a hint, so what? But you can't benefit from it anyway. So the answer to this is, and this is a very, very basic fundamental law in the Hilchos Shabbos that people don't always take into consideration. And that is, it's based on a Tosfos which is found here on the page, but in the interest of saving time, I'm not gonna read it, I'll just summarize what it says. It's a Tosfos found on the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Kuf Chaf Beis. That basically, the Rishonim made a distinction between a direct benefit and an indirect benefit. A direct benefit, I am not allowed to derive any enjoyment from. However, if it was indirect, then it's okay. What does that mean? How does that play out? So, when it comes to a Jew, let's say the lights were left on in my room. The lights are left on, I want the guy to come shut the light. So, shutting the light, what is the malacha involved in shutting a light? The malacha is kibbutz, that you're not allowed to extinguish a flame, right? If there was a candle burning, for a person to blow it out on Shabbos would be a violation of the malacha of kibbutz. This is so too, to turn off an electric light, let's just say, keep it simple, that would be the same type of problem. But, I am not benefiting from the act of blowing out the candle. I'm benefiting from the result of that. In other words, the light was an obstacle to me. I can't sleep because there's light. Okay? He removed the obstacle. The light, the act that he did, I didn't gain anything directly from that. I didn't gain from him blowing it out. The result of him blowing it out is that now it's dark. So if now it's dark, so that benefit is considered indirect. Whereas, if I tell him to turn on the light, turning on the light is a malacha of let's say a different, let's say lighting a candle, a simpler thing, or the old world. Lighting a candle. So lighting a candle would be the halacha of mavir, of lighting something on Shabbos. That I'm getting a direct benefit from, because that act gives light. In other words, if a guy cooks for me, he makes me eggs. He cooks for me steak on Shabbos. So I am directly benefiting from the fact that this food has been cooked. That is prohibited. But if it is just a question of there was a problem, and let's say for example, some guy parked his car right in front of the door to my house. I can't get into my house. Somebody drove his car right up to my front door, I can't get in. So the guy comes and moves his car. So I'm not benefiting from him moving his car directly. If he drove me somewhere, that would be something else. But him moving the car just removes an obstacle. Now I can get into my house. That is permitted. So therefore, to tell, if a guy comes to shut the light, assuming that, now again, these, you have to take both halachas into consideration. It's not one or the other, it has to be both. If you want a guy to shut the light, you cannot say it to him straight out. You cannot say that, you have to hint it to him. But once you hint it to him, you'll say, so what does it help now? The light's off, I'm benefiting. That's not called you benefiting. Whereas, if you told a guy to turn on the light, so you hinted it to him, yes, okay, that part was good, I could check that off, that I did correctly. But now, I have a problem that I'm benefiting from what he did. So that being the case, you'll say, so how do you ever have a guy come to turn on the lights? So the answer to that is that there is another heter, which commonly goes into play, and that is, if I could have lived without it, if I could have managed without it, In other words, you have a room which there's light already, but it's not, you know, guests for Shabbos, the light in the dining room didn't go on, but it's not dark, it's not pitch black in the room, you can still see. It's just not what you were hoping for. You know, it's nicer to have a lot of light. So then we say that as long as there is some light, if he adds to what you already had, that's not called a benefit. That's not called a benefit. You could have managed without it. If I could have managed without it, that's not called I'm benefiting. So therefore, the two great heteri that make it possible for a guy to do something on Shabbos for a Jew, as far as benefiting from the malacha, would be, number one, that perhaps I'm not getting a direct benefit from what he did. I'm not getting a direct benefit, right? That's not what... what he did just removed the problem, and now I could function normally. That would be A. And B would be that really I could have managed without him. I could have managed without him. It's not called on benefit. I could have managed without him. Now, that being the case, so a case in point would be a very interesting situation. Would be what would be now, by the way, what this law of Amir al-Akam is also on Yontif, right? It would be the same thing on Yontif, not just on Shabbos. So now, here would be an interesting case in point. Let's say you had, it's Yontif, and I remember this happening, a situation that I was in, where it was Yontif morning, everyone came home from shul, and they had a big crowd coming for the Yontif meal, and somebody leaned against the wall, hit the light switch, and the lights went off. So, okay, so they, in that situation, you could go get a guy, you'd have to hint it to him, right, but you could get a guy to come put the light back on for you. Why? Because even though he's putting on the light, but there was light in the room anyway. There's light in the room anyway. So you could have managed, he's just making it nicer. Okay, but now that was all fine and good. But once that light is on, it's staying on for the rest of the Yontif. Now you come to the night meal. Okay, now the night meal, it could be that at that point, had the light not been on, you couldn't have stayed in that room. Because it would have been, it depends on the situation. You know, sometimes you have a window, you can get the street lights and stuff, but let's say not. So now you're in a dark room. This would be a dark room without the fact that he put the light on for me earlier today. So in that situation, you would not be allowed to eat in that room. So you can have a case where on the same day, it could be permitted and then prohibited. Because it depends on the situation. At the beginning of the situation, it was fine, because in the daytime, there was anyway light. You know, it wasn't pitch black in the room. So we could have managed anyway. Now, on Yontif, you could say, well, you could have lit the candles, you know, we're right there in the room. Okay, maybe so. But I'm just saying, theoretically, you could have a situation where, or let's say Shabbos later in the day, before Shabbos is over, and now it gets very dark, and it's not yet the time, and you're sitting in the darkness. So then the halacha would be that you would not be able to derive a benefit. So this is the issue that comes about with deriving benefit from a guy. So basically, I just want to make clear that there are two things, there are two elements that a person has to deal with. Number one, you have to deal with, am I telling him or am I just hinting it to him? That's A. And B, the benefit, am I allowed to benefit from it? Am I allowed to benefit from him? If a guy came and cooked food for me on Shabbos, I can't eat the food. Unless it was for a sick person, I can't eat the food. Because I'm benefiting, unless it was the type of thing that it could be, that if it was the type of thing you could have eaten without him cooking. You know, but then you have to really see, you know, if that might depend on different things. But let's say he cooked you a piece of meat, which you couldn't eat it raw. So in a situation like that, then even if he did it on his own, a person could not benefit. So you need to satisfy both of the requirements. I would just end by saying, these are the basic concepts of the laws of Amir al-Hakam. I just want to end by saying this. One of the most common shilas that comes up, which is really a shear in itself, is it allowed to do this for the benefit of the rabbin for a mitzvah? In other words, let's say the lights in shul go out. If the lights in shul go out, and now you want to call a guy to turn on the lights. So, of course, if you could see in the room, which a lot of times could be anyway, you could see in the room without it, and you hinted to him, So then it would be okay, because he hinted it to him, and the benefit that you're getting, you really could have had anyway. You have to decide. In other words, if the light that was there was so dim that you couldn't read by that light, then you would be benefiting from what he did. But assuming that was not the case, assuming there was some emergency lights went on, whatever it was, you had something, you could have managed. So then it would be okay. But what about going and telling him to turn on the lights directly in such a situation? And this Shaila in the old days was one of the, this is a machlokas that raged for hundreds of years, and it came up in the old days on Yom Kippur by Ne'ilah, because in the old days in the world before electricity, so how did you see at night? You had to light candles. But on Yom Kippur, being that it starts the night before, so it's not such a simple thing to have lights for Ne'ilah, because you have to light those lights more than 24 hours earlier, it may not last. So this was a recurring shaila, that the candles burnt out. And now what do we do? Now it's time to say Ne'ilah on the holiest day of the year, and you can't see a thing. So what are you going to do? So you'll say, well, it's Yom Kippur, my gosh, of course, you should be able to do it. But this is not so simple. This is a machlokas. It happens to be that most of the Rishonim hold is not permitted in a case like that. However, there is one notable member of the Rishonim who holds that you could do it. There were different practices in different places. There were places where they relied on that, and there were places that they did not. And Mishnah Berurah happens to be as Machner and as Shaila. Other people, I believe, in Europe. This is, I believe, where one of the common places where you had the Shabbos light. The guy would come into shul and put on the lights, or make lights. He would make lights to the people. This is a very big Shaila. It's every Rav can make the call on his own. There are people that say that with Tzorach Mitzvah, that if it's for the need of a mitzvah, then you could tell a guy directly with no shtick. Again, even if you could tell him, you have to. The problem of Hanor doesn't go away. The problem of Hanor doesn't go away. So therefore, in the Yom Kippur scenario, right? If you couldn't see at all, so then there would still be an issue. However, as far as can you tell him straight out to do it? If you come straight out to do it, that's a machlokas in the poskim, and that is every rav. This happens. I know rabbanim, at least in the old days, European rabbanim were very lenient in this, and they would call a guy to do just about anything and tell him straight. And nowadays, I think the tendency has been to move away from that. So that you have to ask the rav. Yes, sir.